This Week in Retronauts. Oh boy. Get it? That was like a Quantum Leap thing. Yeah.
We got it. It's good.
Okay.
That's good.
Kabuki Quantum Leap would be a great
Kabuki game. Quantum Leap, yeah. Fan fiction. You know, like theorizing one could leap within his own lifetime. Colonel Scott Connor O'Connor steps into the Kabuki Quantum Accelerator.
Yeah, that is Scott O'Connor.
It was Sam Beckett in the TV show.
Yeah, I know.
But Scott O'Connor, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, we're already off to a bad start. Hi, everyone. It's Jeremy
Scott Parrish. Bakula. There's a connection.
Count Bakula. Akumajo Bakula.
Count Jocula.
Yes.
We'll just start over.
I really want to play Akumajo Bakula.
Me too.
Demon Castle Scott Bakula would be amazing.
Unfortunately, that's not the game we're talking about. Hi, everyone. It's Jeremy Parrish with Binge Edwards and Chris Sims. Yep. Following up on our disastrous Metroidvania episode for probably a disastrous Kabuki Quantum Fighter episode. That's right. Kabuki Quantum Fighter, the NES game. That makes no damn sense whatsoever.
No, and that's what's great about it.
I do like how nonsensical this game is. So this episode
ago, several months ago, Chris said we could do an entire episode about.
Yeah, this was my suggestion and request.
I took him seriously. I said, "All right, Chris Sims, we can make an episode about Kabuki Quantum Fighter." And now here we are. It's a micro episode, so it's only going to be like 20 minutes
Three
long.
Minutes.
But this is going to strain your patience and tolerance. Just you watch. That's right. That's our promise to you. The Retronauts promise. You're going to hate this episode.
Unfortunately, I must interrupt your podcast experience to talk to you about one important subject, underpants. More specifically, MeUndies, which are simply the softest, most comfortable underwear you'll ever wear. Once you try them, you won't want to wear anything else unless you're naked or in your swimsuit. For every other second of your life, there's MeUndies. Every pair of MeUndies is sustainably sourced and made from micromodal, a fabric that's 3 times softer than cotton. If you're used to buying packs of uncomfortable, boring underwear that only come in white, gray, black, or tan, MeUndies will change everything. MeUndies comes in all kinds of colors and patterns, and they release a new limited edition pattern every month that always sells out. And this month's special pattern is a rainbow confetti print called Celebrate. So try MeUndies today. Go get the Celebrate pattern before they're all gone at MeUndies.com/games, and you'll save 20% off your first pair. That's MeUndies.com/games. You'll have to feel for yourself to see why MeUndies has sold over 5 million pairs to date. And if you don't love your first pair of MeUndies, they're free. Get 20% off your first pair plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/games right now. That's MeUndies.com/games. MeUndies.com/games.
I think what I find most appealing about Kabuki Quantum Fighter is the same thing that I find appealing about Golden Age comics, in that we have this sense of the storytelling that's possible in games now, that, you know, games can have these elaborate stories and multiple characters. And you look at something like Skyrim, or you look at something like Fallout, and there's all these elaborate and interweaving stories. But there was a time, and it's when I was a kid, and so it's when my idea of what video games are, like, really crystallized, where you got the stories of games predominantly from Nintendo Power, and there was this sense that nothing really had to make sense, and no game that I can think of really typifies that as much as Kabuki Quantum Fighter. And that's coming from, you know, what was at the time a genre and particularly a console that was defined by the story of a plumber who was fighting mushrooms to save a princess from a fire-breathing turtle.
Well, now you are an army colonel using your virtual hair to kill computer viruses because you're a kabuki dancer in cyberspace.
You're 2035? Is that what it was?
It's something like that. 2038? I don't know. It's in the near future.
Yeah. It's a future where you can be a full colonel in the military at the age of 25, which is what is established in the opening cutscene.
That's when they have that accelerating download knowledge into your brain stuff.
Right? Well, you know, this... Yeah, that's right. I know kung fu. This was, keep in mind, a product designed for children, and the idea of a 25-year-old is like for kids. Okay, so when I was born in 1975, I remember in like third grade, so that would be 1983-ish, our teacher assigned us a class project, draw what you're going to look like in the year 2000. Everyone draw themselves as like old people. I was like, I'm going to be 25 years old in 2000. Woof. So I drew myself as like an adult, like, you know, just like an adult. But everyone else was like, that's so far away. I'm going to be an old person. So, yeah, the idea of a 25-year-old colonel, sure, why not?
You didn't draw yourself as a kabuki actor who was battling computer viruses with your weaponized hair?
I didn't know what kabuki was back then, but had I known, I might have been a kabuki dancer in cyberspace.
This is before the whole mind-uploading Ray Kurzweil stuff was popular. Do you know this game invented that?
Well, you know, this was after after William Gibson, you know, wrote like
Neuromancer
and some of the Bridge trilogy books. So it wasn't like a totally out there idea, but definitely one of the first video games to tackle that concept.
The introduction says something about he changes his mind to binary so it can flow freely through computer circuits.
I would personally change my mind to hexadecimal. It seems a lot more versatile.
Yeah.
So the premise of this game is that there is a sentient computer virus that has taken over the world's arsenal of nuclear missiles. And the only way that you can fight it is to go inside the computer where the files are.
Wait a minute, isn't that what's going on right now in America?
I don't think so. Okay. There's certainly no kabuki dancing happening in our White House.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt you.
So the idea is that Colonel Scott O'Connor, 25 years old, military veteran of the future computer virus wars, jacks into the Matrix, digitizes himself, and when he appears, much to his own surprise, he is a digital futuristic kabuki dancer.
Yeah.
And this was a concept that was introduced to me, and I brought it with me, in Nintendo Power, when the game wasn't called Kabuki Quantum Fighter. It was just called Quantum Fighter.
I feel like it probably would have fared better had it just used that name. Like, how many kids in America knew what kabuki was?
Yeah, the art of Japanese theater.
I definitely feel like this game, or probably this article in Nintendo Power introduced it to
same
them.
Here.
Because it has, like...
By the way, in the early 90s or late 80s, when you want to know what kabuki was, what did you do?
You didn't have the internet.
Yeah, you ask your mom, or what, you look in a dictionary or go to a library or something. That's how quaint this was.
I just busted out Nintendo Power.
Yeah, busted out Nintendo Power.
You were futuristic and you logged into the whole Earth Electric Link.
Yeah, I did that a few times.
I didn't have a computer to do that with. So.
If you had Nintendo Power, you'd know that kabuki is a traditional dramatic art from Japan. It's unique to Eastern culture. A Western equivalent might be ballet or opera. The actors in a kabuki drama wear lavish costumes and some have huge manes of colored hair. Whether such hair would make a good weapon is uncertain, but can you imagine a game starring a quantum-fighting ballet dancer?
There's doubt in the Nintendo Power editors' minds already.
Yeah, like, even Nintendo Power's editors, this was like, you know, the Pravda of video games. It was all propaganda. Like, they still said, you know, guys, this is pretty goofy.
Yeah, on the opening page, Nintendo Power, which has seen it all, said, like, just calls out the game for using your hair as a weapon and says, yes, you read correctly. The Kabuki hero's hair, a weapon like no other in video games, is only the beginning of the bizarre things you'll find in Quantum Fighter.
How does Nintendo Power stand on the Shantae games? Since that's you also question. Use your hair there, I bet they're more okay with that. I think that's it's a gendered kind of thing. They're like, oh yeah, girl. Yeah, she'll hit stuff with her hair.
But
a dude? Yeah. That's so weird.
Well, it's...
Plus, her hair's purple as opposed to red. Purple's so much deadlier.
I do think this game is not like, as far as I know, Kabuki Quantum Fighter was not like a huge success. It's not super obscure though either. And I feel like the game or this Nintendo Power article, if not, it did not propel it to cultural relevance, but definitely propelled it to a certain
awareness,
a certain group of people who were part of that Nintendo Power subscription movement in the
in the every
90s.
Boy
movement?
In America
was it a movement?
I consider it a movement. I consider
join
it
a revolution.
There's
subscribe
a Super Mario
Nintendo
Brothers
Power.
3 commercial where everybody's like Mario, Mario, and it zooms out to the whole
Kabuki,
world and it looks
Kabuki.
Like a movement.
I guess demographic would probably be the better way to put it. But
we
like,
just weren't connected yet back then.
I guess we were all alone, isolated, weeping by ourselves because we were nerds. No one wanted to hang out with us.
But every time like I see anything where hair is used as a weapon, like the Shantae games, like those villains in the first stage of Maximum Carnage for Super NES, like I'm always like, Kabuki Quantum Fighter. That's what that's from.
It's worth mentioning a few things about this game. One, it was co-developed by Human Entertainment and HAL America, or HAL Entertainment, HAL Laboratory. HAL, of course, gave us other interesting concepts like Eggerland, a.k.a. Adventures of Lolo, where a little round guy solves mazes he does use emerald framers to block the vision beams of Medusas. They have snake hair. So that's
good
one thing.
Connection.
And also a little round pink guy who eats everything in sight, and including tomatoes with M's on them. Could it be? Carby, actually.
Carby?
Carby. Really? He's all carbs.
The one with the human feet.
No, that's the worst mod. Oh, God, don't bring that up.
Wait,
again.
Is there a version of Kirby who has human?
It's
just
really
a
disturbing.
Meme thing with Kirby with human feet. With his shoes off. You know, he's got big
ass. God, really, I didn't even think of really him gross. As shoes.
Someday Nintendo's going to make that canon, I think.
It's going to be in a Fire Emblem game. It's going to be one of your marriage options. Kirby with feet.
Kirby's feet?
Yes, everyone is someone's fetish.
Quantum feet.
Feeder. Quantum feeder.
The thing I like about the way this game is presented is that Kabuki is something that we're not meant to know about. Like as kids in America reading Nintendo Power. Quantum fighting? We're all on the same page. Like I know exactly what quantum fighting is.
It's about fighting quanta, right?
Yeah, sure. Fighting Qantas Airlines.
Is the universe quantized though? That's
I don't know.
The question.
That's not a question we're going to solve in this game.
Particles.
So
or continuum.
So this game is actually based on a movie in Japan. The Japanese version, I can't remember the name of it, but it's based on a film called Zappingu, which does have some like a kabuki element, but it doesn't have like a dude turning into a digital kabuki fighter. And he definitely does not kill dudes with his hair.
Anybody know the story of the Japanese version of this game? Did they just invent that digital dude turning into, you know, a guy turning into a digital version?
So it's like a sequel to the movie. You play as like the grandson of the movie's character. And it does take place in the future and you're being digitized. But the thing is, like, this is a really unusual case of a game becoming more Japanese in the American version.
Weird.
The character portraits in the Japanese version of the game are all digitized stills of the film actor.
Oh.
But they turned it into like super cutesy anime looking, like that's not photorealistic, but instead like cute, super deformed anime character models, which you'd expect it to go the other way. Like, oh, take out the anime and make it photorealistic in America. Mm-hmm. But no, that's not how it happened.
We need a Retronaut screening of this film now.
Let's all get together sometime and we'll have like a theater
and then
in
we'll
the
play Hyankyo Alien.
Yeah, well we'll watch it in the park and then I'll dig holes in the park that people will fall into.
Yeah, let's just
do
that in my
up.
Backyard. Yesterday.
Okay.
One thing that I think is really fun is that you are presented with this guy who, for some reason, when he becomes digitized, it gives him the body of a Kabuki actor, a weaponized body of a Kabuki actor. And the sort of in canon reason for that is that his grandfather was a Kabuki actor.
He had like some Japanese heritage.
Yeah, so Grandpa O'Connor.
It's those strong Japanese genes coming forward.
O'Connor-san.
Yeah. I really do like the idea that Scott O'Connor seems like the name they would give to Kabuki Quantum Fighter in the American Netflix version. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Okay.
I thought that was a solid joke. Okay, apparently not.
The game. It's a good game.
Yeah, it is.
The production solid, value. Yeah.
What is your
production values are good.
What is your respective histories with the game? Like, it's a game that I've been aware of for a long time, but had never played beyond the first stage until yesterday when I streamed it live and discovered, wow, this game is like testicle punching hard.
Yeah.
This was one of the games that I became obsessed with in Nintendo Power, because, you know, Nintendo Power would have those lavish like box art recreations and cool designs. And I loved the idea of taking this thing. It was right around the age where I was, you know, getting into anime and manga and kind of becoming obsessed with like the idea of Japanese culture as a thing that I was unfamiliar with, you know, recognizing that other countries had culture that I was unfamiliar with. And so blending that with this really weird sci-fi premise and what I thought were like pretty interesting representations of what it would be like to go into a virtual world. I was kind of obsessed with it from
this
that.
This really occurred to you back then?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What it was like to go into virtual world.
Yeah, like because you're going inside the computer. Really, that's so cool.
That's really amazing.
I had a lot of time to think about the things I read in Nintendo Power.
Actually cool. I'm not making fun of you. I mean, there's just something neat. I think that's neat that the story resonated with you like that.
Yeah.
It makes sense because of your comics background. Just the, I don't know, just thinking about stories so deeply and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this ties into my comics background in that there is an episode of Nth Man, the Ultimate Ninja, where where John Doe and I think Novikovna?
Novikova, yeah. Larry Hamazone.
They get digitized, and it's like a cross between Super Mario Brothers and Ninja Gaiden. Wow. They're like jumping around on platforms, and digital ninjas are coming after them. So like this kind of thing was kind of in the cultural zeitgeist. This was that happened. Oh man, that must have been like around the same time as this game came out. This was 1990. I think that comic was like 1990 through 92.
Yeah, it's early 90s, maybe like 89, but I think you're right.
Yeah.
When did Ninja Gaiden come out?
Japan 88, America 89.
Yeah. My first encounter with this game was, I think I bought it used at Funko Land around 99 or something like that, when I was collecting as many NES cartridges as I could. And I was like, oh, it looks like a Ninja Gaiden clone with hair.
It really is very much cut from the same cloth as Ninja Gaiden, as Batman,
yeah,
by Sunsoft.
It felt like a Sunsoft game, production values-wise.
Mm-hmm. It looks Batman. A lot like Batman. And in fact, there's a lot of enemies that are like...
I think
like,
we did a podcast about we did. Batman we did, where we yeah. mentioned...
I read a site where someone described it as essentially being a ROM hack of Batman. And I think that's not being charitable enough to Kabuki Quantum Fighter. But.
No, I mean, Batman, you can like jump off the wall. But seriously, yesterday when I started to play the stream, like my instinct was to try to do the triangle jump off the wall like Batman. Like I realized, of course, I can't do that. This isn't Batman, but this game looks so much like it. It sounds like it.
And
the enemies are the same.
You switch with the select button between a projectile weapon and your hair. Mm-hmm. And when you duck, you punch. Mm-hmm. I think that's like Batman too, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Instead of like, you know, kicking or something.
Yeah.
So it's hard. It's hard when you duck.
They
have to be right there. And then they...
But the thing is, Batman came out in 1990 for NES. And this game came out in 1990 for NES.
Collusion. So there's some kind of
convergent evolution, my friend. It is a pretty crazy coincidence. I don't know exactly when in 1990 this came out. It might have been just far enough into the year, like at the end of the year, that
the guys at Human were moonlighting as Sunsoft programmers.
That's possible.
And they did like the same code in the back end or something, you know.
You never know, man. This
really
does,
don't know.
This crazy. Does predate Human sort of developing its own personality, like at this point, Human was still kind of trying to figure out what it was. This is also around the time that they created that Gilligan's Island game for NES. It's about a year before Fire Pro Wrestling came out, the very first one. So, like, that, I think, was sort of the defining moment for Human. But they still weren't quite there. So they were making Batman Ninja Gaiden clones for NES partnership with HAL.
Why not?
I think it has surprisingly... Like, it is surprisingly fun to play in retrospect. Like, going back to it, I think it's... It's responsive. Like, the animation of whipping your hair forward is actually, like, a really cool animation. It
no, the
looks
character
good
animation
to do.
Is
yeah.
really good.
It is good, yeah. So like, I can see the reason why we're talking about this is because it impacted Chris in a deep way when he saw it as a kid.
Oh,
like,
I would.
I got to grow my hair out.
I would. Yeah. I would write this comic so cheap.
That's your message, Hal.
Yeah. Holler at me.
Have there been any, cosplay Kabuki Quantum Fighters that we know of?
I don't know.
That would be interesting.
Now I know what I need to do for my next convention.
There's this search engine I heard of.
Oh, yeah?
Alta Vista.
I was going to say Lycos.
You can search things. I keep looking out the window. I see the windows
out there.
Tell
me about Web Spider.
It looks like Deadly Towers in the background.
What, the townhouses?
Yeah.
It's good audio content.
Okay.
It's crazy. Sure. Look out the window, guys.
Wow. I feel so lonely with my sword or whatever.
Are you ready to achieve the millennial dream? Are you ready to be able to afford both avocado toast and a home mortgage? Then you definitely need to make certain you're being paid fairly for your professional skills and experience, rather than being exploited unfairly by the man. And there's no better way to do that than by using Dice.com or the Dice mobile app. Dice will tell you the measure of your workaday worth by providing you with salary estimates based on your actual skills, experience, and location. It's also a great source of advice on which skills to develop for maximum earning potential. Dice has been connecting tech pros with job opportunities for more than 2 decades, and their full-scale career hub can connect you with the tools and resources you need to manage your career. Whether that means finding your next job, guiding your next career move, or simply backing you up when you ask for a raise. Dice has insight into more than 70,000 tech jobs, including software development, UX, and project management. So you can take a peek at your peers' salary reports and get a sense of which jobs are heating up in your local market and which ones are fizzling out. Learn more at dice.com/canyouhackit and hack your career with Dice.
Here I'm walking through a field and I'm thinking about a girl just a few years younger than me that was stabbed to death.
There are 120,000 unsolved murder cases in America, and each one is called a cold case.
She said, "I think my dad could be responsible. I think he killed them."
These are some of those rare cases.
Cold Case Files, the podcast. Don't miss a moment. Subscribe now on the Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, or at PodcastOne.com. And don't forget to watch or DVR Cold Case Files, the TV show, every Thursday at 10 on A&E.
Picking a car in real life isn't like selecting one in a video game. Once you commit, there's no stepping back into the virtual garage to swap out parts or models. Nope, in real life, you gotta live with your decision until your loan's paid off. The good news is that thanks to TrueCar, reality has its own virtual garage now, one where all your options are unlocked in advance. The TrueCar app dials you into actual sales data from a network of more than 13,000 dealers, allowing you to connect with a local certified dealer and more than 700,000 pre-owned vehicles. TrueCar allows you to find the exact vehicle you want, whether new or used, and thanks to the TrueCar pricing curve, you can see what others in your area have paid for the same vehicle you're looking for. Plus, you'll be armed with knowledge of real pricing on actual inventory, plus all available sales incentives, before you ever make it to the dealer's lot. That's why on average, TrueCar users have saved more than $3,000 off the MSRP of their dream car across more than 3 million vehicles sold. When you're ready to commit to a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
I like Kabuki Quantum Fighter, and I think it really encapsulates that kind of feel in a way that other games that I was the Nintendo Power enabled me to be obsessed with, like, Star Tropics. I was, like, really into reading about more than I was into playing.
Yeah. Star Tropics had that effect on me. Like, from the Nintendo Power, I was like, yeah, man, this game's awesome, but yeah, I didn't play it for 10 years after that.
there's so much, like, story, and you like, get the idea that it's hinting at this bigger world. And for me, it was the same with Kabuki Quantum Fighter. Like, what is happening in this game? There have to be reasons for this.
Yeah, like, you play as Colonel Scott O'Connor, the Kabuki Quantum Fighter, but all the cutscenes have basically nothing to do with him. It's like, you know, all these guys standing around a computer center and, like, watching him progress into the computer. And occasionally he'll be like, hey, I just cleared the stage or something. But, like, he's not really part of the story. It's like the story is following the people watching him. It's like in the Matrix, if you know, half the story were about just people watching
terminal or something,
watching Neo inside the computer.
Well, it's a really interesting take on, and this is a thing that in retrospect I think might have drawn me to it. It's about a guy going into a video game world in the same way that, like, Captain N was, like, you know, he has to go inside a computer and you're the one playing the computer game, but you're, you know, it has this idea of this is what's happening inside your video game. This is what a virtual world looks like. And so getting the story of the people, like, standing around watching him, I don't know. I think it's really cool. I like Kabuki Quantum Fighter.
There's a game later for Windows 3.1. It's the best Windows 3.1 game ever made, called Operation Interspace. And you pilot a ship into your own computer. It analyzes your directory tree and puts viruses on your actual executable program names, and the icons are in the game, and you rescue the icons or you shoot them if they're virus infected.
Wow.
That was awesome.
That sounds like something that actually inspired real, like, program hacker people, like, holding, you know, ransomware guys.
Maybe so. You never know.
Wasn't there, like, a virus that turned your actual directories into, like, targets and you had to blow them up or something?
Yeah.
And then your system was dead.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds like Interspace.
Like, someone took that seriously. Like, you can't come up with a cool idea like that, because someone will say, what if we did that for real?
Yeah, gosh.
We'd destroy everything.
What if we all became real-life Kabuki Quantum Fighters?
Oh, yeah. Man. I'm wearing my Kabuki suit right now.
It's very lustrous. I like it. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, so...
That's the other thing. Like, in retrospect... The fact that this game has something that's so uniquely Japanese, that it is like, he's a kabuki guy, and it's a sequel to a movie. I'm shocked that this wasn't localized as, like, a Wayne's World game, you know? Like, something that would have been, like, because it's headbanging inside the Matrix.
But would you be Wayne or Garth?
Well, I mean, that hat's gonna stop Wayne from having ability. Yeah, you'd have to be Garth rescuing Wayne.
Whiplash. Can you imagine the neck muscles on that guy?
Got it. Well, I mean, it's all digital, so it doesn't matter, man.
You're right.
It's imaginary.
Nothing matters. Why doesn't he just punch it? Why does he use his
hair? That's how the Matrix works.
Part is art. The art.
You just got to believe, like Parappa in the Matrix. So yeah, let's talk briefly about how the game plays. Like, we've kind of discussed it a little bit, but, like, what I was really surprised about is, maybe I shouldn't have been surprised, but it's ruthless. It's really hardcore.
Very difficult.
Completely
yeah.
without
it gives
Ruth.
You two computer or two continues. And there is one point I noticed where, like, there's an infinite loop, sort of, where this one enemy will give you a one-up every time you kill him. Because I kept dying, and I kept getting the one-up there. But other than that, like, there's just no mercy whatsoever.
It's possible, like, you use the chips as ammo, and it's possible to kind of grind for chips. And then, again, this is something in Nintendo Power. They didn't even put this in classified information. This was the thing of the video game. Whenever you fight, or the thing of the review... Whenever you fight a boss, you have the option to trade in your ammunition for life, which is weird, but
Faustian bargain.
Yeah, I kind of like that it's there. Like,
it can go either way, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, you're trading a pound of flesh for a pound of chips. That sounds delicious, actually.
Usually you eat the pound of chips and it becomes a pound of flesh.
I mean, usually you eat a pound of chips and you gained a pound of flesh. So,
yeah.
Like, I was really, especially sort of taken aback by how hard the third stage is. The third stage basically has no enemies in it. It's all just platforming challenges. So it's like this game of attrition where you're trying to survive and get through all these really difficult platforming challenges. And there are no enemies to grind for health on. So you either make it or you die. Yeah. And there are no checkpoints in this game. You make it to the end of the stage or you don't. And some of the stage timers are so strict, like unbelievably strict. Like there was one that gave me 50 seconds to get through. Really? 50 seconds.
That computer virus is going to blow up the world.
I was just farting around, having fun on the stream, chatting, and then all of a sudden I was dead. I was like, oh, wow, there's a timer. And it's really, really tough.
It also does the Kid Icarus trick of having like horizontal stages, then vertically oriented stages.
Yeah,
it does. Alternating.
But no labyrinth stages in the castles.
No, thankfully.
Oh, I love those.
But is it a Metroidvania?
It is not.
I would say it is. No, I wouldn't.
Get the hell out of here.
I wouldn't. It's a Kabukivania.
Yes, exactly. All right, so any final thoughts on this game? I'm going to wrap it up with letters if not.
You wrote something in the notes about a spiritual follow-up.
Oh, yeah. According to Hardcore Gaming 101, there was a game called Seven Blades for PlayStation 2. It was written by the scenario writer of this game and is a follow-up. I think it involves the Hyperion Space
Initiative.
Satellite system. but other than that, it's like nothing to do with Kabuki Quantum Fighter. So this is a game they need to bring back. They need to put it in, I don't know, like Virtual Console or something.
It's called Shantae.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Make it a little easier, less brutal. Shantae, though, that's a Metroidvania.
Yeah, that's a damn good one.
All right, so a letter
Shantae
from...
Shantae really is it's the Kabuki Quantum Metroidvania.
It's the next crossover.
It brings everything in.
Yeah, we need to do a Shantae episode. So from Tommy Fitzgerald, I have owned this game since it originally came out. I remember seeing previews for it and being intrigued by it, and it turned out to be a pretty good game, at least to me. Now, in 2017, it has become a cult classic, and who knew HAL would go from a fast-paced game like Kabuki Quantum Fighter to games like Kirby and Smash Brothers. It deserves a Virtual Console re-release on Switch or 3DS so more people can play it. I agree.
Agreed.
Disagree.
Oh, damn.
Brutal.
Still, 2 out of 3. From Michael Mertes. My first experience with Kabuki Quantum Fighter was seeing it as one of the many games that kids could Velcro to themselves during the obstacle course run in the short-lived second season of Video Power. In practically every episode, the contestants were coming down the final slide and the co-host was yanking a box of Kabuki off of their Velcro suit. So it had to be good enough for me to take home when I saw it at my local rental store, right? Turned out that it was good enough. As a fan of games like Ninja Gaiden and Sunsoft Games, this scratched my action platforming itch very well. The concept was unique from other games, but still delivered a fun weekend rental experience with great gameplay, music, and even cutscenes.
Disagree.
Let's see.
Wholeheartedly agree. Great cutscenes.
I have a feeling I know how this is going to go.
Wait, you forgot to play my introduction music.
That gets spliced in later, dude.
Okay, good. I just didn't hear it.
From David Greenwood. I love Kabuki Quantum Fighter. My first memory of it is seeing an article about it in a gaming magazine, I want to say Nintendo Power, that the whole pitch was basically slay enemies with your hair. I thought it sounded really crazy and cool, but it would be several years before I actually played the game. I never got rid of my NES and continued collecting carts for it for years, and eventually I found Kabuki Quantum Fighter at a used game store for a couple of bucks.
Sounds like me.
I remember the ads and couldn't pass up the chance to try it out. The weirdest thing about it was the backstory, which felt like a reskinning of whatever the actual story was. The main character was Sergeant Joe American guy who underwent an experimental procedure to shrink down to micro-size and fight hackers inside a computer, but for some totally unexplained reason, he takes the form of a Kabuki actor and is like, sure, we can roll with this. Let's just start whipping people with my hair, like you do. The game reminded me of Sunsoft's Batman, except with quirkier style and much easier gameplay. Disagree.
Agree.
You don't agree.
Hey, how come
you haven't even played past the first stage?
Well, how come there hasn't been a Sgt. Pepper video game? I just thought of that.
There has.
There has?
It's called Earthbound.
Hayankyo.
Then finally from Namdor07, I'm so happy to hear someone else knows about this game. Chris, you just made his day.
Hey.
It was and still is one of my favorite games, and no one ever knows what I'm talking about when I mention it. My mom worked at a place called Keytronic when I was growing up. To this day, I'm not sure what she does, but my understanding is at Keytronic, they made chips or some component that Nintendo used in its games, as every once in a while, she would get free or heavily discounted NES and Game Boy games. Most were garbage, but since we were relatively poor, I played the crap out of any title I could get my hands on. To my delight, one day after work she brought home Kabuki Quantum Fighter. I would never have rented or purchased the game as a kid because funds were limited. The memories of whipping my hair through the game and introducing my friends to the weird title are as strong with me as I'm sure World 1-1 of Mario is to most others. It was so strange at the time, and now, almost 30 years later, the only game I can think of that lets you use your hair as a weapon is Bayonetta. And Shantae.
What? That was a good story.
That was a good story.
I think Bayonetta is a spiritual sequel to Kabuki Quantum Fighter.
Just Platinum, HAL, they're cool. Almost the same thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then finally from Dave Sarin, while most kids were going for the Zeldas and Marios and Ninja Gaidens, I was picking up games like this, Shatterhand, River City Ransom, and other second-tier games that have gone on to become appreciated
River
later
City
on.
River City Ransom was never second-tier.
It was not.
Oh, I would never lump River City Ransom in with Shatterhand.
Yeah. River City Ransom
not in terms of quality, in terms of popularity.
The coolest game on the NES.
He's talking about popularity.
Okay.
This game feels like a second-rate Batman or Ninja Gaiden, but that was part of its charm, and I got many hours of it out of it and really felt it was worth my $20. Also, being a young Japanophile, I tended to gravitate toward this style of game since it reminded me a lot of the anime I was watching at a time. So there you go. It all comes together. Yep. It's all about Japan.
Yep.
So anyway, we need to wrap this episode up because you guys have families to go home to.
There's rush hour traffic outside. Kids.
Good times. I love that. So let me say that I continue to be Jeremy Parrish, even in the virtual
world.
And I have very thin hair in and out of the computer world.
Agree.
It's very sad. I can't kabuki. But you can listen to me on Retronauts at Retronauts.com, on iTunes, on the Podcast One Network and app. And you can support this fine endeavor to talk about weird, obscure NES games through Retronauts.com or Patreon.com/Retronauts. Yes, exciting. Guys, Chris.
I am Chris Sims, Quantum Fighter. And you can find all my stuff by going to the-isb.com. Or heading to your local comic book store to get Sword Quest, Ash vs. Army of Darkness, or Deadpool Bad Blood, or the upcoming Guardians of the Galaxy Annual 2017, which my writing partner and I, we wrote all those, Chad Bowers.
Every time you do one of these intros or outros, you have new comics to talk about.
Hey, it's the idea.
Yeah, he's impressive.
Gotta keep it going.
He's an impressive man. My name is Ben Edwards. You can read my stuff at benjedwards.com or vintagecomputing.com. Thank you very much.
And that is it for this Retronauts Micro. Join us on Monday for a full Retronauts and in 2 weeks for another Micro, because that's how we roll. Thanks.
The Mueller Report. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. President Trump was asked at the White House if Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation report should be released next week when he will be out of town.
I guess from what I understand, that will be totally up to the Attorney General.
Maine's Susan Collins says she would vote for a congressional resolution disapproving of President Trump's emergency declaration to build a border wall, becoming the first Republican senator to publicly back it. In New York, the wounded supervisor of a police detective killed by friendly fire was among the mourners attending his funeral. Detective Brian Simonson was killed as officers started shooting at a robbery suspect last week. Commissioner James O'Neill was among the speakers today at Simonson's funeral.
It's a tremendous weight to bear, knowing that your choices will directly affect the lives of others. But cops like Brian don't shy away from it. It's the very foundation of who they are and what they do.
The robbery suspect and a man police say acted as his lookout have been charged with murder. I'm Ed Donahue.